Before we start now our discussion, we can pay homage to the Buddha.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa.
So good afternoon. So today what I would like to talk actually is about our practice, where we are, and also where we are going. So to talk about something is not always easy because it is based on interpretation, and the interpretation I am going to make is very subjective. So unless you speak about it, it will be very difficult for me to say exactly where we are, where we should go. So for that purpose, to make it a little bit easier, I will read a text, or I will refer to a text that I used last week, and then we can try to figure out where can we locate ourselves in this text. A very simple text, but how this text can speak about something that we experience, something that is relevant to our practice. So the text that I have chosen is one about the simile of the cloth in the Majjhima Nikaya. And by the way, also this simile of the cloth of the Majjhima Nikaya has also some principles that are very similar to a text in the Anguttara that I actually quoted last week. And the text is Salha Sutta. And that text also in the Anguttara Nikaya was also very similar to the Kalama Sutta. So the Kalama Sutta may be a text that is used, that is something that you know. Huh? So now I will use the explanation given in that simile of the cloth, and also, you know, whether we make an exact parallel with the other sutta is not so important. What is important is to which extent we can find something meaningful in that and then use it to our growth, to our understanding. So here the text is starting by the Buddha, and then he is comparing a cloth. And he says, suppose a cloth were defiled and stained, and a dyer dipped it in some dye or other, whether blue or yellow or red or pink, it will look poorly dyed and impure in color. Why is that? Because of the impurity of the cloth. So too, when the mind is defiled, an unhappy destination may be expected, because suppose a cloth were pure and bright, and a dyer dipped it in some dye or other, whether blue or yellow or red or pink, it will look well dyed and pure in color. Why is that? Because of the purity of the cloth. So too, when the mind is undefiled, a happy destination may be expected. A happy destination may be expected. Are we looking for happiness now? Are we looking for happiness in the future? If so, what are the inconveniences? What is going to block us to be happy? And here, the text continues, what bhikkhus are the imperfections of the mind that defile it? Covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection of the mind, is an imperfection that defiles the mind. Ill will is an imperfection that defiles the mind. anger, revenge, contempt, a domineering attitude, envy, avarice, deceit, fraud, obstinacy, presumption, conceit, arrogance, vanity, negligence. Negligence is an imperfection that defiles the mind. I think it would be very difficult for us to always be free from ill will, anger, revenge, contempt, conceit, arrogance, vanity, and all of that. This is not easy. But actually, when we know it, when we are willing to observe these things, when they come in our mind, then that observation will allow us, will also help us to get rid of these things. So here, of course, you know, like the sutta goes on explaining somebody who has achieved a good amount of practice, but ourselves also we see that what follows also we experience it to some level. That means knowing that covetousness and unrighteous greed is an imperfection that defiles the mind. A bhikkhu, this is a meditator, this is you, abandons it, knowing that ill will, negligence, and so on, is an imperfection that defiles the mind. A bhikkhu abandons it. So, a little bit in our practice, like the other sutta that has been referred to, speaks about the tree on wholesome greed, the tree on wholesome roots. So, when we see that just to keep it simple with the roots, that there is greed, hatred, or delusion. When we see our mind, when we understand our mind being like that, and also understanding the consequences that these unwholesome qualities bring to our mind, then we can abandon them. So at some point, like some of us are experiencing that from time to time, then there is a lot of faith, there is a lot of confidence that comes in regard to people who have accomplished these types of things, people also who have that purity of mind. And then the first one is the teacher, that means the Buddha. So we can reflect on the qualities of the Buddha and then also see that that person has been so wonderful and also has given such a wonderful teaching, and then we get the faith. So we get also a perfect confidence in the teaching and also in the people who practices it. So of course here they speak about somebody who is very advanced, who has attained sotapanna. That means somebody at some point, like when we are practicing, then we come to taste the state of mind. We come to taste and experience something that is very fulfilling and something also that is ultimate peace. So when we reach this very deep state of mind, then the confidence we have in these teachings and also in the Buddha is very strong. So when this is happening, then the text continues, I am possessed of perfect confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, in the Sangha. Then we gain inspiration in the meaning, gains inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When we are glad, rapture is born in us. In one who is rapturous, the body becomes tranquil. One whose body is tranquil feels pleasure. In one who feels pleasure, the mind becomes concentrated. So here you may again make the link with the text that we have chosen for the theme of this retreat, the type of natural unfolding that is happening with our practice, starting with the sila, the virtuous behavior, non-regret, and then after that, the gladness, the joy, the calm, and then the unification of the mind. Pamoja, piti, pasadi, sukhang, samadhi. So these qualities also here are brought in our practice. So there is a kind of gladness, there is also some joy, and then the mind is calm, the body is also calm, and the mind is unified. Samadhi. The mind is clear, the mind is balanced. Here the junction we see also with the other sutta comes to the same point. That means there is so much of gladness, so much of joy, so much of happiness, so much of clarity of mind and unification that we are so happy. And the text goes, he abides, pervading one quarter with the mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth. So above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, he abides, pervading the all, encompassing world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility, and without ill will. Then the same thing also happens with compassion, also with appreciative joy, and also with equanimity, the four Brahma Vihara of Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upekkha. Then a shift is happening. A shift can happen. And what is that shift? Then the person goes and they say, he understands thus. There is this. There is the inferior. There is the superior. And beyond, there is an escape from this whole field of perception. There is this, there is the inferior, there is the superior, and beyond there is an escape from this whole field of perception. Why is he talking about the escape from this whole field of perception? So first of all, the commentary will say that when it is said there is this, it refers to the dukkha satcha, the truth of the origin of suffering. When it is said there is the inferior, this is referring to the origin of suffering. When it is said there is the superior, it means that this is the path out of the suffering. So this is superior. And then beyond the escape from this whole field of perception actually is Nibbana. So Nibbana, according to this definition, is beyond the whole field of perception. So here the text that is talking actually about the dynamic of perception. So what is perception actually? Perception in Pali is the word sanya. And the technical definition will be that it's a part of the mind, it's a mental factor, and the characteristic of sanya is just to perceive. So you recognize something. So the function of perception is to make a sign as a condition for perceiving again that this is the same. Like the carpenter who, you know, like when they have timbers or something like this, then they write something on the board, and then they remember, okay, now this is this piece of wood, and it's going to fit in the window there. And then another one, then they put a mark. So they put a mark, and then the mark, they remember it. So what is happening also in our perception, what it means, our perception is that since we are young, we need perception to function. If we don't have a perception, then it's very difficult to function in the world. So we are young, and then with every type of experience, we say, this is my mother, this is my father, this is my house, this is my bed, and this is my cup, and all that, and all throughout our life, we are putting label, we are putting a sign on the experience in ways that will help us locate ourselves and will help us function in a world of convention. So when we are somewhere, we know if they call our name, this is me. Or when your name is called, when you call your friend, then you say, okay, now I will call this friend, and then she will come. She will come, and then you have the phone number again. This is a perception. So it's a sign. So you mark something, and also with the sign that you have put on the thing, then you remember what it refers to. So actually, perception is using concepts, and then these concepts form what we have as a store in memory. So most of our memories are based on the concepts that have been put on reality so that we can function normally, we can function also more efficiently. You can imagine that if you don't have a concept and you are always like a kid, you don't know where to go, you don't know what the bell means, you don't know what the time means, the clock, so you cannot function, we cannot function. So perception is very useful. So is Nibbana outside of that, with this whole field of perception? What we have to understand is actually perception itself, how it is working, but also how it is working for our growth, for our maturity, for our well-functioning in the world, but also how it can cheat us. So our perception, which is actually a very subjective way of interpreting reality, can also cheat us. So what is the practice all about? The practice is all about the Eightfold Noble Path. So this is the path that we have to walk on. That means sila, the eightic behavior, and then samadhi, the practice of meditation, and also, you know, the everything, all the types of discipline that we will have in regard to our mental training, and also the aspect of panya. So sila, samadhi, panya, the understanding, the wisdom, and the faculty of understanding. So in the level of panya, in the level of sila, that means with ethics, we have to be very clear, and also we have to be able to function quite efficaciously with the conventions, and then also with all the types of perceptions that are required from us to function in the world. So sila is based on a very on a very proper way of handling perception. And also, you see, like we have 2 weeks ago, we have seen, actually hindrances. You know the five hindrances. So all the hindrances, finally, you know, the hindrances of sense, desire, the hindrances of ill will, and then sloth and torpor, doubt, and agitation and remorse. All these hindrances, and also most of the definements that we are having in our mind depend on the wrong perception we have put on reality. So, what about, so this is what we have tried to explain. The nutriment for the five hindrances are actually a wrong perception on things. So, you know about that. I hope that you know about that, and also I hope also that we have come to a degree of refinement in our practice to see that now, when I start to put labels on things and then make them very beautiful and then very appetizing and then very exciting, and then we are just dreaming about something that is not actually what the thing is, then the hindrance of sense desire, the hindrance of lust, and then all kinds of excitement, and also the opposite, the hindrance of whatever comes in your way and then block you to get that pleasure, then the hindrance of ill will and anger. So all these things are actually a projection, an interpretation of reality that is using our subjective way of interpreting the thing. So this has to be very clear. Our hindrances are actually created by the wrong perception we make out of the world. The world that we perceive is just a representation that the mind is making. And then it can be useful, and also it can be leading us towards all kinds of unhappiness. So now in regard to sila, we have seen the usefulness of concept, the usefulness also of perception, and also our perception will bring all kinds of definements. But also here, the text itself, when it speaks about the confidence in the Buddha and then the Dhamma and the Sangha, something like this. When it speaks also about loving kindness and then metta and then karuna and mudita and all of that. All that, and also if we are to include all kinds of meditation, like even anapanasati, we are observing the breath. So we develop a perception of the breath, which is becoming our object of meditation. And then that perception of the breath actually is still conceptual, and also it is still an experience that we have interpreted by way of this is a long breath, this is a short breath, this is in breath, and then this is out breath. So the perception we have about our breath is a way that we are going to develop the breath meditation to the extent of developing a very deep samadhi. So the same thing with this Brahmavihara, we are still using concept of people. So people, we just have an image of beings, and then all these beings that we have created, with our perception, we fill our mind with them, and also we fill them also with these loving kindness thoughts, and then thoughts of compassion. So this is to say that perception is very useful and also is necessary to develop the practice of samatha, the practice of calming the mind, the practice also of making the mind clear, making the mind strong and unified. But now, when we have developed sila, samadhi, here comes the aspect of panya. So panya at the beginning is understanding. So what panya tells us, this is from the experience. We see this is something good. If you do like this, this is the consequences. So with the experience, we make our way through life, and then we find what is most beneficial, hopefully, what will bring to happiness to ourselves and happiness to other people. What will lead to suffering to ourselves? What is going to lead to suffering for other people? So the basic aspect of understanding is necessary to give us guidelines for our conduct, and also for the conduct of our mind. Because also, the conduct of the mind has to be distinguished. Okay, now, when we think in this way, this is the result. And then when we think in that way, then this is also the result. So, panya has a type of discrimination that gives us, that can give us a direction where we want to go. So where do we want to go? This was one of the questions. Where we are, where we want to go. So where we want to go actually is related to how we direct the mind. Where do we go with the mind? Because the mind, we have seen also a few weeks ago that the mind actually is what makes the actions. So you think about something, you are going to tell it. You think about something, you have the intention to do something, you are going to do it. So the mind is leading actions. So the quality of our mind, how we think, how we perceive is fundamental. So when we have that basic understanding, when we are settled in that basic practice, when we have a minimum of clarity and also of discrimination about kusala, akusala, happiness and suffering, then the switch is happening here. And the switch, again, is a switch in the level of understanding. The level of panya is going to take a deeper aspect of it. Panya also refers to samadhiti. It refers to right view. So the second aspect of panya breaks concepts. And then it deals with a reality that is beyond the concept. And this is what we are talking about when it says that an escape from this whole field of perception. That means now we have to again investigate how that perception, how the representation of the world is coming true. How do we construct our world? How do we construct our experience, our meaning in life? So this is a key to the practice. And this is what we are doing now, isn't it? To some extent, this is what we are practicing now. That means we develop mindfulness. And the mindfulness has to do with the experience. What we are experiencing. Every day you listen to the instructions, you know, be aware of your posture, be tranquil, and then be clear, know your object. And all these types of suggestions are given to you in order for you to come back to the experience, in order for you, for us, to break a little bit the stories that we are making about what is happening. So reality is what is happening when you think about something else. This is the phrase of John Lennon. So this is interesting. We are in a world, but actually we are not living in the world. We are living in our stories. We are living actually in the interpretation, in the representation of the world that we are making in our mind. So the practice of meditation, when we are here, and then when we are dealing with our pain, physical pain, when we are dealing with all the turmoil that we are having in the mind, when we are dealing with all kinds of discomfort, or also when we are dealing with the happiness, when we are dealing with the comfort, and also with the good meditation, all of that is the experience. What is that experience? What is the experience without beyond the concepts? The experience is the interaction we have with the senses. It is the sense impressions. We know the world through the senses. So we come back to a reality that is not conceptual. So what is that? We have six sense doors. I mean, now this is very technical. This is what the texts are talking about. And also this is a little bit what we have read to you. And also this is also what you can read in the books. We have six senses. The eye door, six doors also. The eye door, the ear door, the nose door, the tongue, the body, and then the mind. six sense door. There are also six sense object: the sight, the form, the colors, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. We also have six types of consciousness. The eye consciousness, I see. I know that I am seeing something. I am seeing you. You see me. You see the colors. You see outside. You see something. Eye consciousness is there. Same thing with the sound. I hear the wind. This is the sound. This is the sound of the wind. This is the sound of the bird. This is the sound of silence. The knowledge of the sound. Then the knowledge of the nose, the knowledge of the smell, the consciousness of the smell. Then the consciousness of the taste, consciousness also of what we experience physically, the touch, and also the consciousness of the mind. So mind also is aware. The mind also is conscious about all kinds of ideas, all kinds of planification, all kinds of images, all kinds of emotion. Everything comes also at some point to be the object of the mind. So we have three things: the sense door, six sense door, six sense object, six type of consciousness, and the meeting of these is contact, passa. So here we are. We have the experience. So the experience is just the meeting of these three things in regard to these six sense door. This is the key. This is the point where we are going to understand reality, real thing. Here now, I am experiencing. From the experience we get, the mental experience also, because now we are all having become quite introverted, of course. Practice is everywhere, but with our meditation, sometimes the mind tends to be a little bit more of an object. Huh? So, from that experience of contact, that experience of passa, which is a meeting of these three things, comes the feeling, the subjective tone, a kind of emotion that relates to what is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Together with the feeling also, then interpretation and also thoughts and all kinds of perception is coming from there. And then this we have to see from the experience. As soon as we are in contact with something, then consciousness is there, and then from the consciousness, then there is a kind of proliferation, there is a kind of interpretation, and also a kind of story that is built around it. No? So whether it is a good story, you know, you make story about events that has happened to your day, that is happening now, that is happening also, that will again happen in the future, and then you are making all kinds of things based on the experience, based on the feeling, based also on your perception. So the problem here is that, again, we are talking about, you know, this quote in the text. He understands thus, there is this. What is that? There is this, that's all. There is this, that means there is just the basic experience. There is the inferior. What is the inferior? The inferior is when we start to crave. So we have the experience of pleasant thing. So we are craving to get the experience again and again. Craving, also identification with the experience, and also a kind of conceit that we have, and also a view that we are forming about the experience. Then we experience something unpleasant. I don't want it. Please put it aside. Please give me something else. Please, I am going to go out of here because it's not pleasant. So unpleasant experience leads us to ill will and also all kinds of things, you know, that are affiliated with the root of hatred. And then when we have neutral type of feeling, then this also will have the possibility to bring a lot of delusion because everything is so boring, it's just so neutral that there is no interest, and then the mind has the tendency to get deluded with that. So when these feelings, when these Vedana make Tanha and also identification with the experience the major thing, then this is the inferior. But we have to understand it. We should not start from the beginning and say, no, I don't want craving, I don't want the identification with that, and then I don't want this again. So again, that type of attitude is an attitude of craving. So when we are experiencing craving, you know, very deep desire with whatever experience we have, we need to look at it. We need to look at the craving in the face, and then to see it, we have to understand it. So by being willing to understand the experience, to be with the experience, whatever the experience is in our meditation, in our life, we just face it. So there is dukkha. Even the pleasant sensation are dukkha. Even the unpleasant sensation are also, I mean, they are obviously dukkha, but even the neutral sensations are dukkha. So there is this. There is actually just a whole field of experience that is impermanent. And because it's impermanent, it's just unsatisfactory. So the inferior is when we are going to interpret it in ways that will make us crave. The superior is when we are able to experience the thing and then have a kind of backup and to be aware, no, my mind is greedy, my mind is full of desire, my mind is full of envy, my mind is full of ill will or hatred. Just back up, you look at it, and then you don't develop craving, you don't want to change that experience. You look at it in the face, and then you understand it, and it passes away because this is the nature of reality. Anicca, impermanence. So, by being able to face the reality in this way, then also we are able to put our life together so the ethics, the quality of our life will be going in the good direction. The quality of our mind also will be led by wisdom, will also be leading to happiness, will be leading to calm, will be leading to gladness and clarity. So this is the way. This is the way to the superior. So, from this, so the escape from this whole field of perception actually is not an experience. This is speaking about Nibbana. The escape from this whole field of perception is the description of Nibbana. So the question that you will ask, I am sure, is that is Nibbana a conscious experience? Is in the experience of Nibbana, are we? Is there a perception? Do we perceive something? So the point here is that the escape from suffering and also the escape from this whole field of perception is still in the domain of perception. So we are still conscious, we are still perceiving. But the perception is going to be very different. So what we will perceive to arrive to that is that we will break the concepts that we have used in our samatha meditation, and we will come to develop another type of perception that is based on seeing reality with the eyes of impermanence, the eyes also of non-satisfaction, and also the more and more we look at that, the more and more we see it cannot be controlled, and then the more and more we get detached, so a perception of non-self. This is just a process. So we are looking at the things, life. We are looking also at the conditions. Oh, experience come to be constructed. And then by looking to that construction, we understand it's dynamic. We understand also the automatism that is built, that are built on that, and then we get detached from them, and then also we don't identify ourselves with the thing. So anatta sanya is eventually what is going to bring us liberation. So we don't deny life, but we don't deny consciousness, we don't deny perception, But the identification we will make with the whole process is going to be loosened and loosened, and then eventually there will be a type of perception that is beyond the influence of all this perception, and especially about the perception of a self. And this is not an ideal, this is something that is happening gradually with our practice. And also this is something that remains very practical, but as Nikki was mentioning yesterday, it can bring some challenge to us, because we see that all our constructions actually are just construction. So when we start, when our world of creation start to crumble a little bit, then it's very difficult to handle it. So this is why we need very skillful perception that will help us keep a balanced attitude, that will help us also keep our motivation to continue the practice. So although we see that the world is just, you know, just the feel of impermanence, a feel of unsatisfactory, and then also a feel of where the self is not there, still we are able to function, but with a view that is not limited to an ego. Ego will be there, I mean a kind of functioning will be there, but consciousness will be far beyond that limitation. There is this, there is the inferior, there is the superior, and beyond there is an escape from this whole field of perception. Does it make sense to you? Can you put it in your practice? Can you also relate your practice to what this text is speaking about? If you may have a question, just to complement this very briefly, there may be time just to look at it, so you can speak. Otherwise, you can also keep that question for Friday, because Friday we are going to have a discussion about the various things that may be a question to your practice. So if you have something now, really on your mind, you can express it, otherwise you just keep it on Friday and we can continue our practice in silence. Why we like them?
Yeah, it seems like there's such a powerful force, but why can't we just live in that more basic relationship with reality more easily?
So why do we like the concepts? Why do we like the perception? Yeah. The question is good, but also we can ask why we don't like reality, why we don't like the perceptions. No? So what is important when we are growing, what we come to see when we grow as a kid, is how to use the interpretation we make with the world, and then how to use it for our survival. So the perception actually is very useful for us to survive. because we know, okay, now we make a deduction out of the labels we have put on things. We say, okay, now this is the fridge, and in the fridge my mama put dessert and all kinds of things like that, you know. And then you make the relationship, okay, now either I can ask my mom to get the thing or I get them themselves. So we are, anyway, there are all kinds of, you know, things that are being processed in a way that the survival that we need to continue to live will be protected, and also not only the survival, but also the pleasure. Because what is the meaning of life once we are able to procure ourselves a basic security of living? You know, the basic, what we are looking for is pleasure. So the basic thing that that we tend to, you know, like a kid will say, okay, now they will say, on the meaning of our life is just to have good fun and then just to enjoy the sense pleasure. But when we grow, then our sense of our hedonic sense, you know, that looking for happiness gets more subtle, and then we turn to, some people go for cars, some people go for sport, and then also, you know, some people go for art, the art, all kinds of art. Some people go for ideals, philosophy, literature, all kinds. So we refine our perception in ways that will give us pleasure. So these perceptions of pleasure, these perceptions that we are putting on reality actually are not the reality itself, but they are a representation of what we have judged it to be. So if you take, for example, a piece of art, you know, a painting, you put it in front, you look at it, then you say, oh, so beautiful, you see. And then I will look at it and I will say, poor, so ugly, you know, how can a person paint like that? So it's very subjective. So we are, our perceptions are just conditioned. They are conditioned by many things. But the purpose of that is first for the survival, and also for bringing us a little bit more pleasure in our life. So, but understanding that, then we can question, okay, now, is the perception we have on reality, is it reality, is it the truth? So when we are practicing the meditation, we come to a kind of, this is what the texts are explaining. You experience the things as they are. That means beyond the concepts that we stick to them. By experiencing the things as they are, experiencing reality directly, then the first thing is disenchantment. The freedom from enchantment. So the enchantment we get with the things is actually the enchantment about the perception we have on things. So you are enchanted because of Santa Claus or because of something, because you have put a label on that. So when these labels start to fade, then this enchantment or the freedom from being enchanted and just being fooled around by, you know, the perception, actually not the reality, comes to progressively also bring a kind of dispassion, or, you know, you are not, I forgot the word, the skillful terms that Nikki used for interpreting, you know, viraga, nibbida, and then viraga. That means you just lose all the type of you are no more kind of taken to a great extent with loss or passion or all kinds of with raga. The lustful desires, and well, I mean, my terms are not good. So viraga, just remember what Nikki said about that. This is excellent. So it comes again to that. So we have gladness, and then happiness, and then pleasure, calm, and then the unification of mind, and then nibbida, viraga, and then vimutti nirnadasana. That means we get liberated from that whole field of perception. So actually the liberation is in regard to the false representation, we have on reality.
You mentioned Anatta-sanya. Is there also Anicca-sanya?
Yes, of course. Sanya? Yes, of course, they come before. So when we come to experience reality directly, then we just see that it is impermanent. So the first realization is the fact that these things are just impermanent. And then also they are just beyond our control. So because of that, then this is also dukkha. So the more we see the aspect of unsatisfactoriness and the truth of these phenomena, then the more and more the perception of anatta is going to develop itself. But anicca sanya, dukkha sanya, and then finally anatta sanya. Some people start also with anatta sanya. So it depends what is your way, what is your entry to the liberation. So depending on your approach, depending on your temperament, then you can start with either one or the other. But normally, to have a good understanding of anatta, non-self, then a clear understanding of the process being just the flux of energy in constant change brings by itself the depth of the truth of suffering, the truth of dukkha, and also the depth of the truth of non-self. And so these things, these three perceptions come to be established one by one. Sometimes most of the time they are interconnected also. Thank you.